Namaste and welcome to this graduate program December week two update. And before I start going through the homework this time, I just want to say that this will be the last homework feedback I give now until 2 weeks today, which will be the 4th of January. So you can send in homework over the Christmas period, and if you want to, you don't have to, obviously. But it won't be read until the 4th of January, and there'll be a final update for December's on the 4th of January. We have the graduate program January live session before that. So just double check the live session details, which are on the graduate page, where you look, where one of the pages where you're listening to this, watching this recording. So we'll get started with this homework. So here we go. We'll start with, pick one at random and start with it. Here we go. Decided this time to do them at random rather than alphabetical like last time. I also want to apologize to the person whose homework got missed out somehow. Somehow it just didn't end up getting read out, and not sure how or why that happened, but we're taking steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. So, hi Helen. So this week I started contemplating, where do I end? There was a deepening answer of, there was a deepening answer of, I really can't find where I end. Wonderful. Sure, the body appears to end, but I can't find where I end. It felt like I'm becoming more curious about what that means. So that's really important to start off with, isn't it? The body definitely has a size and a shape, but where do I end? And I'm not just going to automatically lump myself in with the body. I'm going to become curious as to where I end. And then, as you said here, what that means, if I can't seem to find an end to that, it means that there is really going to be an ever-opening expansion when you begin to contemplate like this. So there is less and less unease about not really knowing where I end, and more openness around, I must go on and on. Even though this is totally different to how I viewed life before, when I was sure I would end when the body ends. So there's a falling in love happening, isn't there, with the openness and the not knowing more than anything. And that openness, that how it feels to be open like that, is beginning to replace the so-called comfort and security of knowing I am, you know, where I end, knowing that I am this body only. So that comfort of knowing has seemed to be a shallow thing, and that causes us suffering. When I assume to know something about myself, I begin to suffer. And when I don't know, when I can't really answer this question, or I have the understanding that I begin to realize I'm going on forever, I can't really come to an end as the formlessness, then that becomes less and less. For me, it became more and more enticing and inviting to really kind of investigate just what that means for me. And it's good that you're feeling less and less, or you're feeling more pulled to really deeply investigate that. That's good. As I kept asking the question, I remembered your feedback about concentrating and what the word alone means in your feedback from my homework previously. So I started to contemplate on, I am totally, utterly alone. It surprised me when there was an uneasy feeling in response to this question, as I've always enjoyed being on my own. So that's a normal response at first, isn't it, to contemplating something like that. We may even notice a mixed response, that some part of me loves that idea and some part of me also is very, very freaked out by it. And it's very normal. We might enjoy being on our own when we feel we choose to be as a separate being. But then to realize I'm completely alone because there is only me. There is only the grace of God in reference to this alone that we're using in December's contemplation. So, okay. It surprised me that there was an uneasy feeling in response to this question, as I've always enjoyed being on my own. Then there was a dawning that if there is only me, then I'm causing all my own suffering. I'm splashing in the water again and wondering why the water isn't still. So the splashing is trying to get something from other beings, trying to get something from life, trying to get something out of my awakening. What am I trying to get from others? Respect, approval, security, worthiness, power, freedom, and whatever we're trying to get that from, that is the splashing. If I just stop trying to get something or realize a healthier way is to begin to allow that to come from inside, like this question we're contemplating this time, then it opens up this wellspring of all that we could need and more, infinite supply from inside out. And we can then begin to recognize we've been creating our own disturbance. If out there is a reflection, a mirror image of in here, when I think, as we saw in lesson two with the glass in the bowl of water, in here and out there are the same, then they're not two, as in the same. This out there is a reflection. It is also you. You cannot have a reflection in a mirror without something causing that reflection. So we're all agitating ourselves by trying to get something out of the reflection. When you really begin to see that, then you're right back in the driving seat, aren't you? That if I just stop doing that, or if I step back from doing that as much as I can, begin to question, it must already be here anyway. What I'm searching for has to be already here. And we're always searching for the intangible things like love, respect, approval, security, a sense of freedom, power, control. Well, those are the things that we're looking for. And in the outer world, our mind and body and our relationships and our finances and all of that, our awakening, can mirror that back to us in a more tangible way. We're not really looking for more money. We want more money because it will make us feel safer or more powerful or in control. You know, if we put the cart before the horse, it's never going to work. So if we can instead look for what we really want and then ask if it's not already here, and that's self-respect then, isn't it? I'm going to get what I want from myself. And I allow the reflection then to mirror that back to me in my experiences. Wonderful. What followed next was another round of feeling not good enough and unworthy. I kept asking the question and also used the statement process and these beliefs passed by with not much suffering. I also felt an energetic shift in the body and a feeling of love towards you and life in general. There was a wish to embrace life in each moment as much as I could, and not hide from life or avoid things. Again, I would say I'm asking these contemplation questions less often, but with more openness and curiosity, rather than contemplating to fix things. I will keep asking questions. That's wonderful. So this unworthiness that came up right after you realize I'm creating my own problems, I'm splashing around in the water, wondering why it's not still. It's all the things I'm trying to do. So a feeling of unworthiness comes up in that next moment to give you the opportunity to choose whether to agree with that or not, to literally apply what you've just seen to be true about yourself. So if you see that by trying to get things from the old egoic way, trying to feel worthy from my relationships with others, my interactions, my finances, my awakening, all of that, then I'm going to keep splashing. That's the same as splashing, isn't it? So that arose in that moment, not something going wrong, but so that you could confirm I don't need to try to feel more worthy. I can instead question whether I've ever at all been unworthy. So that's the immediate application opportunity that comes up after we have a seeing, isn't it? This week, I've continued with where do I end as my main contemplation question. Occasionally, I've also looked at the statement again, I am utterly, totally alone, as I did last week. Early on in the week, I kept feeling as if a big realization was just beyond my senses or understanding. I'm not sure what it was, but as I kept reaching out for it, it felt like it would slip away from me. I kept with the question, where do I end? And still couldn't find where I ended. So when you get this sense that something's about to be revealed to you, there are normal ways to try to grab it, isn't it? And any trying to reach for this thing is going to make it seem elusive. So instead, if you can just develop this attitude of there's something that wants to be revealed, but just relax, it's going to come. And I know that's kind of a new skill because most of us, we feel we're right on the verge of something. Of course, we want to have it now. If you realize there's nothing at all that can block you from that, except for your own trying to get it. Many times I'd be sat coming out of meditation, usually years and years ago, and I get this sense that there's something trying to break through. And it was a recognition of the oneness, you know. And I kept trying to, the first time it happened, I got really excited and really went back and sat down in meditation again and tried to get back to that place where I felt this openness beginning, this something coming. And this must have happened about 20 times in the end before, I don't know, over a period of about 6 months, before I really just kind of learned to go, great, okay, something's coming. And my attitude is just kind of almost forget about it as best I could, which I couldn't do because I was excited. So I'd put my attention on something else. I'd watch something funny and in my taking attention off of it, it would just come through anyway. I later realized there was this idea that there was something I had to do to get this realization. But it was just going to be given effortlessly by grace, the grace of God alone. It's always trying to bring these things to us. But in our grabbing and reaching, we kind of make ourselves into a separate being again. And that energy of being a separate being is too low to be able to download this. It's literally a download sometimes, isn't it, of understanding and epiphany and something profound. So my question shifted to, what am I then? When I shifted to this new question, I realized what was eluding me before in the week. It was a feeling I'm going to find out for sure what I am. When it shifted to the what am I then question, I suddenly realized I didn't know. And I was okay, actually okay with not knowing, which felt amazingly peaceful. I'm not sure if that's a significant realization or not. I guess there was a belief I would just know exactly at what I was exactly. But perhaps I'll never know. Where shall I go with my contemplation question now, Helen? So when I ask myself, what am I right now, when I ask that question, there's a sense that I can never know, that what I am is a beautiful mystery. And for the rest of this existence and any bodies that come after this, I'll be trying to answer that question, and I fail every single time, and it feels beautiful and it feels blissful. How can we define something like space that we can't see or touch or taste, and yet is also the magnificent source of the entire universe? And as you're falling in love with not knowing, of being a mystery, of not coming to know with the mind per se, then your mind will begin to have epiphanies and insights and knowingness also about that. That maybe my body and my mind is here so that I can also know myself. That not knowing is the first kind of the unknowable. I am not something that's knowable as the formlessness. And simultaneously, I'm also knowable as all of this universe in the ever-changing constant parade of shapes that are coming and going that I'm playing with in my infinite being. I love to create these shapes and play and create the shape of ever more self-aware and sentient form so that I can kind of have this recognition that in my most primary fundamental essence, I am unknowable. And that's a bit of a shock to mind, isn't it? Like, I thought I would come to the right answer. But as you embrace that more and more, you see that is the right answer, that you're a mystery. You're a profound, beautiful mystery, showing up as all of this, including the body mind that's sent in this homework, and all of it. So one aspect of you, the unmanifest, is unmanifest means not manifest, which means not seeable, not knowable, not perceivable. And you'll never, ever, ever get a handle on that. But it feels so beautiful to not be able to get a handle on that, doesn't it? When you really take that in, when you really let that hit you, as you said here, wonderful. I would say, right, with the same questions over Christmas, into New Year, if you want to, just notice that when you ask that kind of question, what am I, you get two types of answer. You get this unknowableness, and immediately all of this is here as the answer as well, isn't it? All these shapes that you're making, all of this. And what if the whole day is the answer to your question, what am I really, actually? Some total profound mystery, and the being I met, you know, the neighbor who I said hello to as I was going out this morning, and the person I met in the shop when I was buying something, and, you know, the person I worked with online, and everyone in this, and it just goes on and on and on, doesn't it, like that? Wonderful. Stay with the same questions, because you've had a breakthrough here, and you will really begin to see the fruit of that. Lovely. Let me see if I can pick one. There we go. Namaste, Helen. Thank you for your loving guidance. Prior to the December GP satsang, I shared a post on Facebook of someone who had strung Christmas decorations from the ceiling in such a way that it seemed that there was an invisible tree there. I saw that, actually. I thought how amazing that is. It looked wonderful, didn't it? Very clever. My lighthearted comment upon sharing that picture was, I have decided to decorate a Numenon tree this year. Wonderful. With some contemplation, I had some deeper seeing that coincided with the GP contemplations. The decoration was there so that a tree could be known, even though it's formless. So too, all phenomena is there for the self to be known, simply for the love and joy of it. Yes. If you see that, if we just start with the formless, vast space of awareness, the expanse of our being, if all there was the unmanifest, and you hadn't taken any shapes or forms, and you were just everywhere, invisible, intangible, formless, and there wasn't even an everywhere, because there was no reference point of an object to say, I am everywhere, there is a thing, then how would you recognize yourself if you had no contrast, if you had no ability to contrast? And you're exactly right. And I had that same realization when I looked at this Numenon tree, that the body mind, the becomingness of the body mind, the limited sense of egoic self, the finite self, is all your play, isn't it? We could say, to help you recognize yourself, the things that are coming and going, moving and changing, becoming, ending, starting, having a duration, being born and dying. All of that is happening so that you can recognize through contrast. You don't need those things. It's not the forms recognizing the formlessness, formlessness recognizing itself, isn't it? The invisible nature of ourself. But without the contrast, we wouldn't be able to, and as a human being, without the ability to discern two things, that without even the ego, ironically, without the ability to say that's form and that's formless, how would we recognize formlessness? Only by contrast. You can't really recognize the space in the room when it's been there all the time until you put something in it. And then it suddenly becomes, you suddenly become aware of the space that's always been there, glaringly obvious, and yet overlooked because it's constant and unending and unchanging. And then we put something changing and ending and becoming inside that, and it becomes clearer what we are by contrast. We are the forms too and the phenomena too. But they're just appearances inside you, inside that real nature. Wonderful. The silent space within the decoration is the same vast space surrounding it. There's no inside or outside, is there? Mind says there's the invisible noumenon tree, and then there's the rest of the space in the room. But it's just not like that. There's just a concept, isn't it? Inside, like saying, you know, if I have a glass or a container, the air inside it is different to the air outside it. It really isn't. It really isn't at all. Objects, give the seems to be of over there and here. In my vastness, I am nowhere, for all is contained in me and I have no location. I am ever now as it has always been. I sleep in the rock, dream in the plant, stir in the animal, and awake in the human. So I'm limited. I am myself completely, but I'm also limited in my expression through the form I take. Your words are beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And you can see, hopefully, that this has only been the only thing to see, isn't it? Then I can enjoy all of these shapes I'm taking without the shapes I'm making and playing with, without having to get anything out of it. You know, we've just been able to enjoy for the pure enjoyment, as you said earlier, and for the love and joy of it, actually. So if there are objects in the room, there suddenly are here and are there. And there's a now and a then, isn't there? If there's an object here now, when this body goes, somebody will say it was here before and now it's gone. And there'll be a sense of time with the and distance and space with the objects appearing, the phenomena. But hopefully you can see that's just a temporary thing that isn't really, the ultimate level of reality. Space and time and distance and progress and becoming and change are an optical illusion, we could say, based on the idea that these phenomena are real. Lovely. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, let me see if I can find another one to read. We'll go with this one. I noticed first there was an excitement and feeling of expansion, contemplating the question, where do I end? Then there was resistance, and one day I started crying a lot. It came surprisingly and lasted long. During it, I prayed that I couldn't take this anymore. Please help me. I felt it was some kind of mental blockage towards finding myself dissolving, and there was a surrender. I felt a relief, but there was still some kind of heavy feeling in the chest. Next night, I woke at 3 a.m. and a question came, am I powerless to get everything I want, came, and I had to stay with it 3 hours before I found peace. After that, I had many insights and felt progress. I also started to notice all the beautiful things in my life and how far I'd come. I have also had triggers and tests, if I can stay as the self in all situations, feeling jealousy and anger at times. Let me just comment on that before I read the rest of it. When you ask such a powerful question, where do I end? You're going to get two types of answer, aren't you? And the first answer you got was this expansive feeling of excitement and a sense that I really can't be defined. I don't really have an ending. And that's the excitement and the openness. And then the other type of answer is the ego's answer, which is, I really do end here. And I've had a lot of time in earthly years and bodies proving to myself through causality and seeing again and again that I end here because I've tried to get something out there and it hasn't come. It hasn't come. I can't get it. And I begin to feel very limited. This gets reinforced over and over again. I feel limited. I experience limitation and lack. And around we go. So for me, there was this huge sadness that began to come out finally when I could allow it. A real sense of utter grief and disappointment and sadness that I could now allow because I could see why it had happened. Why, for so many lifetimes, had I failed to get what I want? And in this particular lifetime, body, mind, vehicle, in a seeming succession of this separate being, that a seeming evolution of a separate being to this point where what I wanted so much was awakening. I couldn't seem to get it. It's this sense of being a limited being, isn't it, that comes up. All the failures and disappointments that we've had as a separate being, not getting what we feel what we think we need or want for our safety, our approval, our comfort, our survival, our whatever that is. So you just noticed that coming up as you did, and you did the right thing to ask for help. And then there are unseen powers, energetic powers. There are so many sages trying to help you in every moment, some in a body, most are already having left their body, and many, many other beings that are here to help lift this burden. But again, if we don't ask for help to release this energy, once we see it, we can release it. We don't have to do all that by ourselves. Why? Because they are also you and they're desperate to help. But it's a free will universe. They will never impose themselves. I'm talking about the saints and sages that have come and gone. Maybe you have a favorite one, whether you call them angels, ascended masters, avatars, saints, sages, teachers. It really is just those that have done exactly what you're doing already and are trying to support you all the time. It's always available in any moment, but we forget to ask, don't we? We forget to open up. Because as an individual expression, we're not separate, but we have an individual sense of free will where we have to ask and open up. So am I powerless to get everything I want? For me, there was a massive realization at some point that I really felt I couldn't have what I wanted, that had been reinforced over the eons, this sense of feeling completely powerless and limited as a separate being. So I'm really glad you stayed with that. It might have meant a night of not much sleep, but you see, hopefully you've broken through something. And I'm not letting this question rest. It's important. I'm going to stay with it until I break through here. So the triggers and the tests that you've described are where you're being tested with that question, where you're testing yourself with that question. If what I want is respect or approval or money or more time or more awakening, is it true then that I can't have that if I don't really end anywhere, if I'm everywhere? And you'll notice this feeling of jealousy, resentment, that type of thing, where I really feel I'm agreeing that I can't get what I want. Jealousy in itself is saying that somebody else has what I want. Someone else outside of me has what I want and I don't have it. It's an extraordinarily useful tool for me eventually when I really learned to embrace jealousy. That if I see it out there, it must be available in here because out there and in here are one. So it's just these things come up to give you an opportunity to apply what you've just learned, what you've just seen. But in general, I notice I still have difficulty starting the questioning and staying with it. All kinds of resistant thoughts and activities seem to disturb me. I might just stay with it 1 to 3 minutes and then seem to get lost in thoughts. I notice it's even hard to start the statement process, which I like and find very helpful. Yeah, I guess it's the I can't get what I want belief that's in the way, which I have contemplated. I think resistance has been the biggest obstacle in the way all the time. I know I am the self, but feel there's some part that doesn't want to notice this. Any thoughts on this? Yeah, we were talking about this in the extra class we did on Saturday, that the statement process, anything we do that challenges our base assumptions about ourselves, and this one, I can't get what I want. What we really want is to feel good, isn't it? We want to feel good. We're trying to get respect and approval and safety and security and all that stuff so that we feel better. And what we really want more than anything is to feel better. The statement process or asking a question, a really direct question like, where do I end, is going against this assumption that I can't get what I want. The statement process especially is extraordinarily direct, beginning to feel better. We don't fix the problem. We don't solve anything in the statement process. We begin to feel much better. And that's really what we want first and foremost. If you can do that consistently, then our outer world begins to change to reflect that. It has to. But if you can see that there is some part of you that doesn't want that because it's invested in the assumptions that you can't get what you want. And just to see that is okay. There's some part of me that really doesn't want to do this contemplation. I get distracted after however much time. I get distracted after writing two statements. I get two statements down in my process and then I'm next thing I know, I'm surfing on Facebook or something like that, you know. It's very, very normal. And it's not really about the amount of time you're spending doing these things. It's just to be aware you'd like to do more of them. You'd like to see the resistance and you'd like to be conscious of the resistance and not be at the effect of it. That's exactly what's happening here, isn't it? You're starting to see this belief that's been stopping you. If you deeply feel you can't get what you want, if there's a deep agreement with that from all these experiences that seem to prove that, then it's going to be affecting everything, whether you want a cup of tea or awakening or to just to feel good or to stop suffering or more money or more time or to find out what your vocation is, you know, any of those, whatever you want, it's got to be playing everywhere, right across the board. It's been there forever and we haven't noticed it. So the moment you start to realize, oh my gosh, this is affecting my entire life, and I literally see it playing out, I'll have to be distracted if I believe I can't get what I want. I'll have to be distracted from doing something that's going to give me everything I want. But the reason that you're starting to see it is because you're not believing that so much. Just because we've had hundreds of thousands of experiences as a separate being in this body and others that we haven't been able to get what we want or need doesn't mean that was ever true. It means we were believing that and therefore experiencing that. You're beginning to turn that around now. Wonderful. I find it very helpful to write down all successes, insights, statements, desires, and things I'm grateful for. And I bought a new notebook for that. Even starting this seems hard. It's absolutely fine. I have reams and reams of notebooks where I write statements and I just journal on things that insights I've had or where some little thing pops up to look at, you know, something like that. And at first there were weeks and weeks between writing something because I realized that I'd dropped my contemplation, forgotten my question. It's very common. And then, you know, over the time, I began to write more and more often. And usually I jot something down every day now. Sometimes I'll just write some statements about something I've seen while I was out or if one of you is having a challenge with your awakening, I'll write some statements or something like that, you know, just to help out. And it's just really what helps is to have a set time. If you can have a set time where I'm going to sit for 5 minutes a day with my question, then you get into a little routine with it, and it's harder to forget it there. Sometimes people have even set an alarm on their phone just to remind them. Or I used to put a note by my bed, so it was the last thing I saw at nighttime, my question, and then the first thing in the morning. So I made sure at least if I forgot the whole rest of the day, I had those two times where, and it's extraordinarily powerful to have your question as a last thought in your mind before you fall asleep. And the first thing that you see when you wake up as well, that's going to set the day off in a different way. So don't fight against this. It's natural and it's the effect of this belief, but you're coming out of it. And what can you do to help yourself with it? Fall in love with how far you've come, not how far you need to go still. You're doing amazing, all of you are. And you just need to shift the focus to how far you've already come, that you're seeing through this powerful belief. And just a little bit of structure and discipline sometimes helps, just to, as you're noticing the resistance. For me, I still sit every morning with my first cup of tea, sometimes with my notebook and pen, and I'll just see what wants to get written. And sometimes I'll add to it more through the throughout the day. Sometimes that's all I write. But I have that structure and routine because, and that's still there now, even though the resistance doesn't stop me. But that's one of the ways I overcame it. So I hope that is helpful. Wonderful. Thanks for your feedback too. Glad to have you with us. Okay. So here we go. From the Ashtavakra Gita. The self looks like the world, but this is just an illusion. The self is everywhere. One, still, free, perfect. This means to me that the self looks like out there. The self looks like the world, doesn't it? All this out here is the self, and it's taken the appearance of the world. You call it the world, but in the deepest seeing, self and world must become synonymous in their meanings inside us. There must be no difference in the meaning I'm giving to those two words. But it is always happening in here. Yeah, so this means to me the self looks like out there, but it is always happening in here. Inside this I am presence, and I am can only be everywhere. Its nature, unchanged, regardless of what the happening is looking like. Wonderful. It remains one, still free and perfect. Questioning brings us back to this truth. So on one level, there's a whole world, an appearance of a whole world, and all the change that's happening in that world. And all of the evolution that's happened since the dawn of time. And on another level, absolutely nothing at all is happening, is it? All that's really happening is the shapes are changing in the appearance of you. Just because the shapes are changing, just like if the clouds change shapes in the sky is not affected. Even the clouds aren't really affected. They have a different shape. And they might even go back into their invisible nature as water vapor. And they might form into something visible like a cloud, water droplets that you can see. But it's still water, isn't it? It's still sky. It's all the same thing. Wonderful. Now that you are formless, chapter 13, insights, I am starting to have less wide swings between self and ego. Wonderful. And eventually those two words must become synonymous as well, self and ego. They must have the exact same meaning in your heart. Eventually that I can think about myself as a form and a finite limited being, or I can see my infinite nature. They're not really different. So I am starting to have less wide swings between self and ego, as all is the self. I am having less guilt, unworthiness, and frustration because of this. There is the experience of knowing that every experience is the self. There is this feeling of this smooth continuum. Wonderful. So less and less of self and ego, two separate things. More and more, there's a continuum of how I can experience myself, like the dimmer switch on my light here. Turn it right up. It's very bright. I'll feel expansive and infinite and all of that. I turn it down and down and down. I'll begin to feel more and more limited and more restricted and experience my beliefs more and more. And it's a continuum, isn't it? There isn't really a self and ego. There's just two different modes, ways of experiencing myself. Okay. I'm experiencing less separation when I experience bliss versus shame. It allows me to move on in a way that I have not been able to whenever I get stuck in the mire of shame or self-disgust. So if bliss is just one shape you can take and shame is just another, and these shapes are always moving, then you're much more likely to experience bliss more often, aren't you? Wonderful. I can see the self in my confusion, emotion or thoughts. Confusion is just another way I'm appearing, just another shape I'm taking in this moment. The idea that nothing has ever happened seems such a big leap for me at one time, but I'm starting to have an experience of this as the wide swings in identification cease. Shame and unworthiness are unable to take up the energy and space that they did previously. When I lose my footing, I easily come back to knowing that I am never not the self and that nothing actually happened. So for a moment, I take a shape of unworthiness. I feel unworthy. I have these thoughts about myself. Has anything actually happened to the shapeless formlessness that you are? Not at all, has it? And as you begin to realize that you haven't actually been unworthy, you haven't actually not been the self, you haven't actually become the ego. That's just a way of perceiving yourself. And as you really grasp that, then you can have the worst, strongest negative emotion, and it means nothing in that way. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. It's only our insistence, isn't it, that this negative emotion means I'm not awake yet. That something really happened. I'm not being the self in this moment because this emotion is arising. But then this simple shift and switch, as you said here, to I am the self arising as confusion. I am the self appearing as unworthiness in this moment. And it has to begin to change. It has to begin to shift into some appearance, some shape that feels better. Wonderful. So when I lose my footing, I usually come back to knowing that I am never not the self and that nothing actually happened. There is therefore not this re-earning of worthiness or backsliding that I would experience before. So good, so good. This lets me know that I am only ever the self. My actions no longer define me in the way that they have previously. When experiencing triggers, I seem to be offered the option of not being defined by them either. Wow, so good. This trigger can come up, this huge thing, and I can say it means something. All right, I can say it's just a trigger. It's just an emotion. It's just an appearance I'm making in this moment. And the awakened being lives a meaningless life. That sounds really cold, but there's nothing that can happen that for me that I'll give any meaning to. Some strong negative emotion would arise, even if I had somehow some self-judgmental thoughts. It wouldn't mean anything at all. It would just be what is in this moment. It wouldn't be evidence of anything at all, just a shape I took, and it'll disappear. Okay. When I am no longer paralyzed in my decision, I am no longer paralyzed in my decision making as to what is the right decision, as I know there are no real consequences for living life. Wonderful. As an analogy, the ball seems to be in my court now, whereas I did not even know that I was in a game before. I love that. Understanding what I am brings a completely different advantage to the path of awakening. The knowing that my life is not random and that there is only ever one purpose for any happening, which cannot be separated by any interpretation, brings me peace. All roads lead to the one, and the back of all things is this one. Beautiful. So no more backsliding, even when I seem to backslide, you know. Doesn't mean anything, does it? So what if you felt totally horrible for a moment or an hour or a day? Yes, you prefer to feel better, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that you weren't the self for that time. It doesn't mean you're not making progress. It doesn't mean anything. Wonderful. Go for one more before we take a break. Namaste, Helen. As I've been continuing this month's lesson and asking the question, how far do I reach? I've been really looking inside at the consciousness, at the thoughts that make up the ego, mainly by repeating lesson 3 and seeing the nature of thoughts repeatedly. It is becoming clear all thoughts are the noumenon. It is therefore becoming more intuitively clear day by day that the person that thought itself to be separate was really always the noumenon, disguised by thoughts and feelings of limitation. Yeah, I can experience myself as a limited being, or I can experience my unlimited, infinite, formless nature, where I don't end at all. And both of those are the same in the end, aren't they? Yes, it feels nicer if I experience myself as a formlessness, but it will feel the same if I experience myself as the ego eventually, because I'll see there's no difference. I can either look this way or I can look that way. I can experience like this or like this, but I'm still the same either way. It doesn't affect me, does it? Wonderful. As you said many times, the ego and the noumenon are the same one. As this becomes clear, the peace and beingness of the noumenon presents itself more readily throughout the day. This goes along with chapter 13 reading, recognizing you are the undivided one, which includes all things. So there isn't that imaginary division that we think there is between self and ego, is there? Wonderful. As I contemplate the quote from the Astravakra Gita, particularly, the self is everywhere, one, still, free, perfect, there was the realization that even thoughts of limitation, separation, and unworthiness and fear are still perfect, the one perfect self. Thank you for your teachings. So even these, what we would call negative, and even positive, are seen to just be labels that we've placed upon the appearance of what is, and even limited and unlimited, finite and infinite, ego and self are just labels of ways that we can experience ourselves. And you begin to move beyond these labels, that they're just labels. If I label this as ego, I won't want it. If I label this as self, I will want it. But without those labels, everything is just experienced equally in its beautiful perfection. Everything is a beautiful appearance of the perfection of the self, isn't it? And without the wanted and not wanted that comes from the categorizing something as good or bad, real or unreal, all of that, life begins to be quite magical, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so we'll take a break there and we'll finish the rest of them in part 2. Thank you.